Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business. Welcome to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. Today, Peter and I are joined by special guest experts, Greta and Ben from Undia Farms. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
So to get started, I guess we'd love to hear a little bit about you and your background and, of course, the community farms. And then we're going to dive into your research. I understand that you recently completed a SARE grant for dynamic accumulators, and we want to learn all about your closed loop nutrient management system and how great it is and what our listeners need to know about it.
Yeah, well, Unadilla Community Farm is based in West Edmiston in central New York State. We were founded in 2014, and our mission is to provide a space for the teaching and practice of sustainable skills. And we look at that kind of term sustainable skills holistically. You'll see from our work that it covers a lot of ground, from the organic farming, food forest design, to natural building, plant-based cooking, and a range of different skills which can provide young people with the tools that they need to start up sustainable food and farming operations and take that in a number of different directions. And our two main programs are our Beginning Farmer Training Program, which hosts young people usually between the ages of 18 and 35 who come to the farm for a fully immersive experience. They live on the farm and they learn all of these different practices that I've mentioned. And then our second program is our Veggie Box Delivery Program, which is sort of intimately connected with the Beginning Farmer Training Program because it's the literal fruits of our labor as we're doing this work, as we're learning these skills and teaching these skills to the people on the farm. We're producing fruits and vegetables, and we grow about 231 different varieties of fruits, vegetables, mushrooms, and herbs. It's a lot. And then the vast majority of that is delivered to food banks in the region. This is considered a rural food desert where there is what's called a low-income, low-access food desert. So there's a high proportion of people that are low-income, and also there's a lack of access in terms of there's no public transportation. There's a significant number of people who don't have vehicle access, and you have to drive, 40 minutes to get groceries. So that's a key piece of our work, too, is to, not just teach these skills, but then to be able to benefit the larger community. So, yeah, that's an overview a little bit of our work.
It feels like you cover everything from just having six different programs to growing 231 different products, the growing, the marketing. You really do it all.
And Greta, before we move on, give us a quick recap. What's your career path? What path have you walked to get you to where you are today?
So my parents actually started an organic food store in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the early 90s. And that was a bit ahead of its time as the organic food movement was just beginning. So that was my introduction growing up in the store and seeing the cross connections between our food choices and the environment, our health, etc. So that kind of got me interested in this pathway. And then when I was in university, I got involved with the WOOFing program, which is Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms, where you can volunteer on farms and learn these skills. And now Unadilla is also a WOOF host. And so that kind of got me involved in the practical work of farming. And my interest has always been in both the practical, on the ground change that we can make and, literally build this alternative system from the ground up, but also the policy work too. And so you'll see that, from my bio that I also got involved with grassroots organizing and policy advocacy. I started working with Food and Water Watch and working on issues of factory farming, fracking and its impact on the food system, GMO labeling, and a bunch of other issues related to the corporate control of our resources. And so that's kind of my two-prong approach, I call it, where I'm doing this work and teaching these skills, but also involved in the policy advocacy world as well.
And Ben, welcome aboard. What path have you walked?
I guess I came from a different background, and then Greta and I have converged here on Unadilla Community Farm. I started out in construction, just doing contemporary construction, starting in my late teens and early 20s. And then as I grew older, I wanted to contribute more to a larger movement. I started doing low-income housing in Latin America, working with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And then from there, I switched over to natural building and building infrastructure for intentional communities and for organic farms in Europe and in the United States. And then through that path, starting out with the building and then building infrastructure for farms, then I started realizing that the farmer, I started realizing, is the real hero, who is taking waste products in the local community, just taking agricultural waste, turning it into soil amendments and nutrients for the soil, and then creating like actual wealth and health and nutrition for the community. So then I switched career paths, and now I'm the project manager here at Unadilla Community Farm, and I lead the farming and then also the building of the infrastructure here.
I'm very intrigued with the phrase natural building, Ben, and some of the pictures on the website. You have to say brand tools that I enjoy using, and I'm anxious to hear a little bit more about that if we get into it. But as Michelle said, we're a little more interested initially in our conversation with some of the work and science that you guys are uncovering. And my final introductory comment will be, I try very hard, guys, not to overuse a phrase, and I keep it for when I really feel that it's appropriate. And hearing your career paths and what you guys are doing there, the phrase for me, noble work, comes to mind. And isn't it true? We all need to come together to feed the planet better than we're currently doing it. So kudos to both of you and what the project is defined as.
Well, it sounds like both of you have, with your skills in history, really converged on creating this place that is a testing ground for new, you know, ideas, new farmers, but then also, Ben, your construction and experience in that place, I think, is an element, like so many elements on farms, that people don't really think about, like what the buildings are and how that fits in. And then from my perspective, the cost and the investment and all of that. So it feels like it's a really fertile, pun intended, training ground for this work. More specifically, I mean, getting into, you know, your research with the SARE grant and the dynamic accumulators, like, is this the first sort of big research project you've done like this, or is it iterative? How do you find, I guess, these places where you think that your experience and your farm can really, you know, move the needle forward?
Well, I guess central to our work is developing practical solutions, especially geared towards younger people who are getting into farming. And we know a lot of young people are approaching farming from like the sustainability side of things. And a lot of it is very cutting edge. A lot of the techniques or the different the plants that are being grown are new. And so we trial a whole bunch of different methods here on the farm and showcase a whole bunch of different like USDA recommended sustainable agriculture practices, and then try to develop best methods that we can then recommend for our interns to replicate on their farms. So the dynamic accumulator research, that was the first research project that we got a SARE grant for to fund the research, because that was a bigger undertaking, needing to do lots of nutrient analyses in the soil and plant tissue and in liquid fertilizers that we derived from the above ground parts of the plants we were growing. All right, so SARE is Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education, a part of USDA, and it's actually a really great opportunity for farmers who need to do research to advance their work. And it could be market research, or it could be researching different farming practices or trialing new cutting edge methods, or in the case of dynamic accumulators, testing and proving or disproving practices that have been passed down for decades but haven't really been trialed in an empirical way. And so it's a really good opportunity for farmers to get the funding they need to do the on-farm research and to be able to take time out of their schedules farming and have their costs covered also for having more expensive, you know, analyses and things done.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just add, because that's kind of also my wheelhouse with like the fundraising and the grant writing. And like, that's a key component of our beginning farmer training program as well, is, you know, not just the practical hard skills of farming, but how can you actually, you know, do this either in a for-profit way or a nonprofit way, but how can you access the capital to fund this kind of work? And that's, you know, one of the biggest barriers to young farmers. We see studies, you know, showing that like student debt is one of the biggest barriers to young people entering the farming sector. So that is a component of our program too, is like talking about, you know, how do you write a SARE grant, or what are different grant opportunities? I think SARE is so unique because it is accessible to farmers. You don't have to have a nonprofit business structure or like a certain type of entity. It really is accessible to the everyday farmer, and it will pay for your time too, which is pretty rare in the world of grants.
With the dynamic accumulators, was this a methodology that has been used on farms but never thoroughly studied? And so that's what you did with your research, is added that.
The term dynamic accumulators was coined in the 1980s. It's based on the idea that plants are accumulating minerals and nutrients in their foliage in different amounts. Like, you know, for example, broccoli has a lot of calcium in it. And so we know that from a nutrition standpoint, but then you can think about that also from a farmer's standpoint and be like, okay, so that plant, the broccoli, is accumulating specifically calcium out of the soil. And so that can be a really useful tool for the targeted extraction of specific nutrients from fertile soil. And then you can take the plant. I wouldn't necessarily do this with broccoli, since that's a nice expensive cash crop. But another calcium accumulator would be stinging nettle, that grows wild, really easy to cultivate. And then if you need calcium, let's say you need to create a foliar spray for calcium to help an ailing crop on your farm, you can go harvest some of your stinging nettle, steep that in water, and then create a liquid fertilizer that you can then spray. So this is the idea behind dynamic accumulators. However, it's mostly, the term dynamic accumulator has existed in the realm of sort of anecdotal on-farm research. In other ways, mineral accumulators or dynamic accumulators have been being studied by USDA and in peer-reviewed journals, but under the term of cover crops, and then getting lumped in with other processes that are going on with different cover crops. But the whole concept of nutrient scavenging, or like nitrogen scavengers, and oats and barley, for example, are both dynamic accumulators, and they're also commonly grown as cover crops. So the processes behind dynamic accumulation have been around and have been known about, but the term itself has sort of been relegated to the sidelines. There hasn't really been any empirical research done on them. And in recent years, just maybe in the past 10 years, that led to a backlash where people started thinking, hey, well, maybe dynamic accumulators are just pseudoscience. Maybe this is all just a hoax after all. And so we wanted to step in and answer the calls for further research to bring the concept of dynamic accumulators up to snuff, and to show that, hey, there actually is peer-reviewed research out there that proves that dynamic accumulation is a real process that plants are using, and that this this is a potentially valuable concept for farmers, and it definitely needs more research. So we're really hoping that our research, what we've done, is going to help facilitate further research by other on-farm researchers and stuff across the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, you bring up an excellent point. And good research, contrary to how most people think of research, good research might answer one question, but then raise 10 more. Is it true? Am I correct in my memory? I've read that dynamic accumulation is also being used, let's say, in an urban setting to remove or accumulate the plant, choose plants to accumulate heavy metals that might be creating toxic soil environments?
Correct. Yeah. So there's a closely related study of hyperaccumulators. And hyperaccumulators are plants that are being studied specifically for their ability to accumulate toxic heavy metals, which is useful in the world of soil remediation, like what you're talking about. And so it's very appealing to heavy industry and the mining industry and like heavy polluting industries, so that then they can use these plants to help with soil remediation efforts. And so hyperaccumulation, which was a term coined around the same time as dynamic accumulators, hyperaccumulation in the late 70s and dynamic accumulation in the 80s. Hyperaccumulation has gotten a lot more research. There's a lot of research in peer-reviewed journals and a lot of enthusiasm and money going into these studies. The field of hyperaccumulation and the fact that that is farther along than dynamic accumulation is really useful for us because with our research to help bring the field of dynamic accumulation up to snuff, we looked at what sort of progress has been made in the field of hyperaccumulation over the past decades. And then, you know, to have some insight into what sort of research do we need to do in the field of dynamic accumulation to help facilitate more research and to help more clearly define what's going on with these plants.
I have a quick comment. You brought back memories for me with the stinging nettle, Ben. You took me right back to my teenage years working on the farm. We weaponized that silly plant, and we would chase each other around the field. The problem was how to get the plant in our hand as a sword, because we didn't have gloves, and you had to kind of get to the root system because you couldn't grab it by the stem. And those battles didn't last long at all, Michelle. You get whipped once in the arm with one of those weeds, and you either give up or the torture. So you made me chuckle, Ben. Thank you for that.
I think that this goes back to something that Peter and I talked about in the last episode, is how does research in one area really expand? And so the hyperaccumulators are well funded because an industry wants that research to help them, and that industry is well funded. And it's, you know, there's maybe some cynicism in that, but it is paving the pathway for smaller industries or different industries. And so I do think that a lot of technology and conversation has this trickle down effect. So I liked to, you know, see how that has helped you in your path so far. And then I guess my follow-up question is, so the cover crops makes a lot of sense. You've now caught me up to speed. I liked the broccoli example. Are there other ones that you looked at in your research or that you use generally?
Well, I would say the most famous dynamic accumulators would be stinging nettle and comfrey, specifically Russian comfrey, or bucking 14 variety of Russian comfrey. But really, stinging nettle and comfrey are really sort of like the king and queen of dynamic accumulation. A lot of anecdotal research and evidence, a lot of folk practices being passed around the world of using these plants for different things, like comfrey for animal feed, actually, in addition to just tilling comfrey foliage right into the soil as an amendment to steeping these plants to make nutrient-rich liquid fertilizers or chop-and-drop mulches with them to top-dress the soil with nutrient-rich plant material. So in our study, we identified six promising species for further research, six promising dynamic accumulator species, comfrey and stinging nettle being two of them, as well as lamb's quarters, red clover, red root amaranth, and dandelion. We actually did a big literature review looking at all the different dynamic accumulator species that are currently being used for dynamic accumulation, and farmers have glowing reviews talking about how it's really working out for them and all these different species accumulating specific nutrients. So we compiled a big list of those. And then following the recommendations of previous researchers of dynamic accumulators, specifically Robert Coric, who actually is, many think that he coined the term dynamic accumulation in the 80s. Shortly after coining the term dynamic accumulation, he met with Dr. James Duke of USDA, who was an herbalist on staff with USDA, and he was putting together what's now called Dr. Duke's Phytochemical and Ethnobotanical Databases with USDA. He was specifically looking for plants with chemical compounds that could have cancer-fighting properties. But the end result is the Dr. Duke's databases through USDA have a huge amount of data on thousands of plant species and thousands of different chemicals and compounds and nutrients, the concentration of plant tissue of these nutrients and chemicals and compounds. And so it's a really great database, all being sourced from peer-reviewed journals. And so USDA is curating all of this data. And so we actually already have then a huge data source of nutrient concentration data. And Korek recommended that the next step that we need to do in advancing dynamic accumulator research is to take the Dr. Duke's databases, use that as the base data set, figure out based on all those all the nutrients in there, calculate what is the average nutrient values for all these different nutrients amongst all different plant species on file. And then you can figure out if stinging nettle, for example, is accumulating calcium above the average. Stinging nettle, for example, accumulates 3 times the calcium as the average. And the other plants that we're studying all had really good levels, like the lamb's quarters accumulates phosphorus at over 9 times the average. So these are plants that have been shown in peer-reviewed research to have the potential to accumulate really high levels of specific nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Ben, take us on a little side path for a couple of minutes. The list of species that we're talking about, that you're working with, includes many that fall under the man-made category weeds, and which is only a plant that's not wanted, right? There's nothing genetic about it. But that said, there's a reason why weeds are so persistent, and it has to do with evolution and some of the science that you two are presenting and sharing with us today. So is there, in a minute or two, something you've learned about this category of plants, weeds, that allows you to look at them differently?
So here at Unadilla Community Farm, we do a hybrid approach. We have a market garden set up, and we also have a food forest. And we're showcasing like multi-story cropping or alley cropping, having multi-story rows of different fruit producing, like berry shrubs with fruit trees over them and ground covers under that, with rows of annual vegetables growing in the alleys. And so in food forest design, you're really looking for low maintenance, perennial or self-seeding annuals. Especially like for ground covers, you want plants that can spread, that can hold their own, that don't need a lot of maintenance, and that can take the weed pressure off at your farm. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of quote unquote weeds that we're growing at the farm that actually have really good economic potential or are really nutritious and are starting to catch on, like stinging nettle being known as a really highly nutritious plant with a lot of good commercial potential, both as a medicinal herb for tea, as just an edible green, also as a bast fiber plant for producing fiber. And so with the dynamic accumulator study in particular, we were looking for plants that are hardy to zone 4, which is where we are. We're in the cold north, so these have to be cold hardy species. But then also it's really important that they're really basically dead easy, low maintenance for a farmer to grow. So we wouldn't want to be growing broccoli, like I said earlier, as a dynamic accumulator. The farmer should be focusing on growing the broccoli as a cash crop to sell and then have something much easier that they can just seed some fallow land with stinging nettle, mm-hmm. and then have that available. But basically the focus being on developing like on-farm nutrient management systems that are really cheap, really easy, that aren't going to take a lot of the farmer's time. Mm-hmm. So in that case, yeah, the concept of a weed plant, a plant that is really easy to grow, doesn't need any care from you. You can even do your best to kill it. It's just going to grow back. You can just go there and heavily harvest it, multiple cuts throughout the season whenever you need it. And it's not going to take any time away from the farmer focusing on growing the actual cash crops like the broccoli.
Yeah, I guess I'll just add, we did make some observations and we would not recommend red root amaranth as a dynamic accumulator. It is much too pervasive and is just popping up everywhere. So it's good to differentiate, what is perhaps too pervasive and starts mm-hmm. becoming a weed on the property.
And Greta, that's an excellent comment, because there's a point where we need to take good science and then translate it into day-to-day application. So in theory, that particular species might be a very good dynamic accumulator, but it's very valuable what you just chimed in with, that, oh, you may not want to use this one or it might take over the entire farm. Michelle, part of your life is in the seed world. Do you know if breeders are trying to use some characteristics of these weed species when appropriate to breed them into some of our agricultural crops?
There is research into red clover. People like it as a cover crop. And so I think you'll see it there. I would also add that lots of plant breeding, whether public or private, is, you know, always looking forward, since it does take about 7 years to commercialize those new varieties. And so I think that there's an opportunity that this research could be picked up. And if there suddenly is interest in these crops or more potential, that I could see them being added into breeding programs. And then hopefully as the demand picked up and the science picked up, that there would be a product in the marketplace for that.
And Ben and Greta, as I have questions on the farm in general and what you guys are doing on a holistic level, so why don't you take another minute or so and let's wrap up the conversation about dynamic accumulators.
So our research had two main parts. One was the analysis of Dr. Duke's databases through USDA, which is an amazing, sprawling resource. We downloaded all the data on 20 different beneficial nutrients and compiled that into a much more easy to navigate dynamic accumulator database that you can access from our website at unadillacommunityfarm.org. So now we have a curated database based on peer-reviewed data of all identified dynamic accumulator species that meet nutrient concentration thresholds for specific nutrients. So it's proven that they are accumulating exceptionally high levels of specific nutrients. And so then that database, we're hoping then can be a really useful tool for farmers in the future or on-farm researchers to help them select plants to study or to implement trials on their farms. And then the second part of our study was to then choose from our newly created database 6 species for on-farm trials here at our farm. We were tracking soil nutrient concentrations in different soil horizons, also in the plant tissue and in liquid fertilizers derived from the above ground parts of the plants that we were harvesting. And some of the main takeaways that we learned from that study. So first of all, the dynamic accumulators, they don't actually just create calcium out of thin air. They can only extract nutrition that's already present in the soil. So while broccoli has the potential to be really high in calcium, it's only going to have high calcium levels if it's grown in calcium-rich soil. So this is important to keep in mind when exploring how to apply dynamic accumulators at your farm, that they're only really good at extracting specific nutrients from soil that already has those nutrients present in them. Mm-hmm. So for example, there's different leguminous cover crops that are nitrogen fixing, and that's not dynamic accumulation. That's something different. Comfrey, on the other hand, is accumulating nitrogen, but that means that it is just extracting the nitrogen from the soil. Mm. So it's then good as a nutrient scavenger, but it's not actually going to create nitrogen. It's going to be extracting that nitrogen from your soil.
If you had grown these plants in a place where there was calcium-rich soil, and then you steep them and then you apply it, you would apply it to a different area and that would benefit the plants there. Is that correct? So it's not in the same place. You're not taking the calcium back and then reapplying it. It is an amendment. It's adding to the place where the plants are weak or missing this element.
Well, there's different theoretical applications for dynamic accumulators. It all needs to be more further researched, and we need more data on different trial plots across the country, different regions, so we can start building up a larger data set to better understand what's going on. So in the case of shallow-rooted dynamic accumulators, they're helping to scavenge specific nutrients in the topsoil, and then you can harvest that plant material and move it, relocate those nutrients to another part of your farm, either in mulch form or in liquid fertilizer form, mm-hmm. or just add them to your compost. But then there's also the concept of deep-rooted dynamic accumulators, which are also sometimes called mineral miners, that they have really deep tap roots, like comfrey, for example, can have a taproot going like 8 to 10 feet deep. And then the idea is that these plants are then helping to extract nutrients that aren't accessible to your crops because they're deep underground. Either they've been leaching down into the subsoil, or they're just present down there in unavailable forms. And then these plants can then access that nutrition, pump it up to the surface, to its foliage above ground. And so that would be a way of extracting nutrition from deep in the subsoil and bringing it up to the surface. And so that's something else we were studying in our study by tracking soil nutrient concentrations at different soil horizons. And we found, for example, with stinging nettle, we found calcium concentrations decrease over the two-year trials that we were doing here at the farm. In the soil nutrient concentrations were decreasing down in the subsoil and the 1 to 2 foot deep soil horizon. And then the calcium concentrations were really increasing in the topsoil, in the 0 to 6 inch and the 6 to 12 inch horizons, suggesting that maybe the stinging nettle really is pulling that calcium up from deeper underground, which that would be really useful for farmers to be able to access nutrients that are too deep underground, that have either leached out and left the root zone of your crops, or they're just down there static in the subsoil and aren't within reach.
To wrap up, normally I would ask if there's anything else you want to add. And then, of course, where our listeners can find you. We will definitely include your database in the show notes. But any other ways that we can connect with you or final thoughts?
Yeah, I would just say people can visit our website, unadillacommunityfarm.org, to learn more about the dynamic accumulators, to learn about our beginning farmer training program or our veggie box program. And definitely, you know, people can feel free to get in touch with us. We're happy to, you know, be a resource and to talk about these topics. And that's why we're here.